Welcome to the Changing State of Talent Acquisition, where your hosts, Graham Thornton and Martin Pred, share their unfiltered takes on what's happening in the world of talent acquisition today. Each week brings new guests who share their stories on the tools, trends, and technologies currently impacting the changing state of talent acquisition. Have feedback or want to join the show? Head on over to changestate.io. And now, on to this week's episode.
All right, and we are back with another episode of the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast. Excited for our next guest. Please help us welcome Gretchen Hustis, Group Director of Brand-Led Change at Siegel & Gale. Gretchen, super excited to have you.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to you, Graham.
Awesome. So we're going to start with a super easy question. I think we'd love to hear a little bit more about your career journey, you know, as it relates to employee engagement, employer brand. And tell us a little bit more about what led you to your current role at Siegel & Gale and, you know, how you spend a typical work day, work week.
Sure. It does feel like it's not the easiest question. I swear when I'm going back, like working 25 years, but I will give you the abridged version. I started, you know, my work career as a management consultant, and I was doing lots of strategy work and organizational design work, M&A work. But what I noticed was actually that was the easier part. Designing these structures or new processes was the easy part, but it was the human side of things that was actually the hardest. So I was still a consultant, but I pivoted my focus as a consultant into more leadership, talent, employee engagement, consulting. Second chapter, I'd say, was getting real curious about what makes all this sticky inside an organization. As a consultant, you're on the outside and you don't know. So the next chapter was really turning to some internal roles, internal HR leadership roles, all in the space of organization development. I did work with Pitney Bowes, SAB Miller, and HSBC in leadership roles in HR. And I was really fortuitous to actually work on some big change organizational initiatives that touched both marketing and brand transformation work and employee engagement, performance management kind of work. You know, no one designed this. It happened. And it was really fortuitous because I kept looking at, oh, there's something kind of interesting about the interplay of this space. And a few of the clients were starting to come out with purpose. And that was a big eureka moment for me, which was like, ah, this purpose space is really interesting. It was ahead of the curve. It was 2006 or so that all started. So it was before purpose is so in vogue as it is today. But that would be the next chapter. And so eventually I left those in-house roles, set up my own consultancy about purpose-led change. And that was fun, except the more I was doing that work, I felt like the final missing ingredient was creativity. It was like, as we drive this change and we try to connect humans with purpose and meaning and brand, it's got to be more creative. And as a small little consultancy, I didn't have that up my sleeve. So I eventually joined into Omnicom, first in a different agency than Siegel & Gale, but ultimately at Siegel & Gale, where, you know, the lifeblood of all of our agencies under the Omnicom umbrella is creativity. And we're packed with designers and creatives and people who can help bring that stuff to life. So that's the potted history.
Okay, well, I'm really excited to hear your background because I think there's some parallels with my own background. You know, one of the interesting things to me when I came to Change State and started Change State with Graham was, you know, my background is in consumer branding and market research. And I came into this new space where people were talking about this thing called employer branding. And one of the surprises to me was that the marketing folks or a lot of the marketing folks in our clients, you know, within our clients' organizations had no idea what employer branding was. And the employer branding people didn't really talk to the marketing folks. And this was really puzzling to me because, of course, the whole point of the people function of the organization is to kind of deliver on the experience or the promise of the consumer brand or the master brand. And so I think things are changing, but I would be, before we get into a meatier conversation, I'm just curious to see what your sense is of the current state of that in the wider sort of world of business. Do you think that organizations now are building those bridges between, you know, the HR function, the employer brand function, and the marketing function?
Yeah, I would say it's getting there. You know, it shocks me still how siloed it is in organizations. And that's, you know, one of our challenges delivering the work that I do. We often start with one or the other. It's either the marketing and branding team who's come to us or it's the HR. But, you know, ultimately, it's about bringing them together. And it's, I would say, the enlightened organization that gets it, unfortunately, that they're not all quite there. But that's one of the jobs we do is try to knit it together. And in one regard, I kind of look at it as, it's not their fault. Like, I was lucky to have this kind of river jumping experience because we all have our disciplines and we do our thing. And it does take someone who speaks both languages, but I think they're getting there. increasingly organizations are seeing that this thing is really, really important to tie it together.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to touch base on, well, this concept of an EVP and how it might relate to a organization's wider brand purpose. You know, we often interact with clients who are laser focused on the employee experience, and they come into us and they say, we have all of these great ingredients to work with. Here are all the perks that we offer. Here are the benefits that we offer. Here's what our compensation is like. Here's what we think our cultural values are like. And there's often not much of a conversation going on about what the actual wider purpose of the organization is. And in some way, you know, if an EVP can be simply described as the unique why behind why someone should choose to work for your organization, it should actually connect to that wider brand purpose. You know, it should, you're trying to attract people who are passionate about delivering that experience to the end customer. And I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit about that. And a related question that I have, which is, you know, I think for organizations that have lofty purposes that are doing big change in the world, it's easy to get people excited about rallying behind your brand purpose. But the reality is a lot of the organizations that are out there are kind of in the vast middle, or what I might call the vast middle. They're doing maybe work that's not that interesting. They're making widgets. They're providing some sort of valuable service to customers and businesses, but no one necessarily grew up as a child dying to work for that company. And the reality is we live in a world where people take jobs because they need money. So I'm just wondering, like, do you think it's possible for all organizations to, you know, have an EVP that is strongly aligned with that wider brand purpose? Or is that something that's reserved for organizations that do kind of serve some of these loftier goals?
Yes. Well, that's a big question. let's unpack it. I do think it is possible. And I think it's about how you go about it. So we work with a lot of clients who are, you know, in what we would call the B2B space, or, you know, even in B2C, more closer to a widget situation. No one actually makes widgets, but, you know, I'm thinking right now of a client in the automotive sector, right? And we're working with them now, and ultimately what they're producing is, you know, fuel systems, starters, alternators. And in talking to those employees, they do care what it is that we're ultimately here to do. This is a situation where this organization is actually rebranding and establishing themselves as who they are. And they care. Now, they care about their basic needs as well. And so that's an ingredient. But what's coming up is, I also care, like, what's the story of what I'm attached to and why we're in the world. And that's surprising to me in a way, because this is a pretty tenured organization of employees and, you know, more blue collar manufacturing. Because ultimately, if you look at other research, it says, well, this is a thing that the younger generations care about. You know, there's some very compelling statistics. You know, I think a couple of years ago, there was something from Harvard Business Review, 9 out of 10 people would take jobs for less money if it allowed them to do more meaningful work. But often that's tracked back to, like, a, you know, younger generation, Gen Z or so. But this client, you know, it's a pretty mature employee base. So I know they care about it, and tying an EVP to it, I think, is important, but you can't eliminate those other factors. So in fact, like, when we think about how we build an EVP, we're doing an audit of, like, 10 core factors that drive what employees want. And one of them is, how do we bring meaning and how do we connect to something that our company is doing? And so it finds its way in. It may not be the most important thing, but across the board, from, like I mentioned, this automotive company to, you know, an engineering company to, you know, a healthcare supply company to safety science company. I mean, I'm just thinking of these off the top of my head. It's got its place. And what I would say is, that's your differentiator. Because if every organization just tries to respond to the needs of what employees want around factors like their learning, you know, or their growth, or the kind of diversity environment, it would all look the same. So what's different? What can you differentiate around when you think about your employee value proposition? It's, what are we really here in the world to do? What makes us special as a company?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, that is a conversation we often have with our clients. And when we're doing employer brand projects and helping companies think through what their EVPs are, we have the very experience that you just described, which is, well, we're starting with the same ingredients for most companies. You know, there's really not that many variables in terms of, you look at what we're offering to our employees in terms of compensation, benefits, total rewards, other perks like that. And so, yeah, I like what you say, that it really does have to connect to the wider purpose, because otherwise, well, all EVPs would really be the same. You know, I think the challenge that we sometimes have is, not all employees are going to necessarily be as strongly connected to the EVP as maybe we would like. You know, some people are going to be in the organization just for a job, but that doesn't mean that we can't be aspirational with our EVP and have an EVP that talks to maybe the ideal employee, you know, the employee who is here and is passionate about serving that wider brand purpose.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And we don't, you know, we don't force that ever, right? Everybody's going to find their own way into the level that they're going to connect with purpose. And also with an EVP, we do think about you have to cover off, you know, things that will meet the majority of your employee base. I mean, for what it's worth, our point of view is, though, there will be table stakes things that you need to deliver out to employees and prospective talent. And they may not find the way into your crispest articulation of your employee value proposition simply because there's only so much headspace and real estate space and recruitment and so on that people can have. And so you want to shine a light on what is that really, really special stuff. And so we actually do sometimes say the thing for the, you know, the employee that just wants to have a basic salary that's decent and fair benefits may not be the thing that you highlight in your employee value proposition. Even though it's there, it has to be there because you're really trying to tell a story of something special.
Yeah. So, you know, I like this idea quite a bit, Gretchen. And I'm wondering if you can, you know, if there's a natural tie back to, you know, this concept of brand champions too. And, you know, your EVP, you're, you know, much like the Apple super fans, right? To use an example we've, you know, talked through before on the podcast, right? You know, you also have brand champions related to in your employer brand too. And, you know, that goes beyond the basic needs. So, you know, how does this concept of brand champion sort of, you know, tie into your EVP work? And, you know, what does a typical subset of, you know, a company's employee base, you know, what percentage of that does lean towards becoming a brand champion? Or what does that pool look like? And why is that so important?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I love me a brand champion. So I have to talk about that. Yeah, so we look at brand champions as the employees in the organization that do two things well. And we typically plot them on a, you know, 2x2 grid. So first, they really understand the company and its brand and what it stands for. And they're able to action that. So they could translate that understanding into the right kind of decisions and actions. And then the other dimension is they're really passionate about it and committed to it. So it's employees who have both of those, they end up being the brand champions. And they drive a heck of a lot of value once you've identified them. So, you know, from our research, and we do a study every other year, World's Simplest Brands with Simplicity at Work. And some of the things we've seen is, you know, they're solving problems, unexpected problems, really well. They're feeling more productive. They're trying to learn new things and innovate. And they're looking for ways constantly to improve in their work. And it's, to me, interesting because those are things you can't really write into someone's job description easily. It's the kind of things you want your employees to do, but it's really hard just to demand that they do it. But they do provide that effort in those exceptional ways. And so we want to cultivate brand champions. They also are great out advocates, right? So, you know, your employees are one of your most powerful ways of telling your story as a brand, and they're very trusted. So if you get these brand champions, they're also all talking that story of who the brand is and really advocating for it. So we like having them because they provide a lot of value back to the business. And then what's kind of interesting, again, from this research that we've done recently is what really motivates these people. So if you want to try to get them there and keep them there, it's interesting. They're more driven by what we kind of call the more intangible factors. So rather than the benefits and the salary being the highest priority for them, it's some of this stuff like professional growth, the commitment to DEI, overall the company's reputation, how their work directly impacts work with customers or clients, having challenging work and kind of fulfillment. So it's a different set of things than more like those table stakes. You know, this brings the conversation perfectly to, you know, that place I was saying with the EVP. If we just wanted people who aren't brand champions, we could talk a lot about our salary being market comparable and benefits. But if we want to get people in the organization who are really likely to turn into these champions, we have to highlight some of the other stuff.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, this kind of reminds me of the concept of promoters with Net Promoter Score. It seems a little bit more nuanced than that, but obviously the idea with the Net Promoter Score is you have these promoters that are very important and impactful to the brand, and that's why we pay close attention to them. A lot of organizations pay close attention to that score. You know, the Net Promoter Score is a relatively simple metric. I'm wondering if you could just share how an organization might go about identifying who the brand champions are within the organization? I mean, is there a series of questions, or is it kind of depend on individual organizations, or how would you go about identifying those people?
Yeah. Well, we do it at Siegel & Gale through a survey. So we have a survey tool that is a series of questions that employees answer. And I think what's interesting is, you know, I talked about those two dimensions. So they understand the brand and what we're standing for, ultimately being able to action it. And then the second area being how committed and passionate they are about it. What's interesting about the way we construct those surveys is they actually have to pick the right thing. So they can't just say, yes, I do understand our brand. We list a series of options and they have to choose the right articulation, because that means they actually do know it, you know, and that they've actually got that knowledge inside. But that's how we measure it. So we measure through a series of questions, those two dimensions. And it's a really clean way to see how many you have in the organization. And then also, I mean, because I said the two dimensions, it's a helpful read on how to move people. So we call people who are super committed to the brand, so they have that passion and commitment, but not necessarily articulate and knowledgeable of what it is all about. Those are the wild cards. So it's great. They've got all the enthusiasm, but we've got to educate them and get them a little more connected to being, you know, on the point about what our brand and our promise is. And then you know what to do with those people. It's great they're with passion. You need to focus them on the education aspect. And the other way around, we have spectators who, it's interesting, they fully understand it. They comprehend it, but maybe they're just not committed or passionate about it. So then we have to look at, well, how can we, you know, put some interventions in to really start to build that connection and a little more passion to what we're about.
Interesting. It seems like the wild cards would be an easier group to convert than the spectators. It's easier to educate than maybe to create passion in someone where it doesn't exist, but I don't know. Yeah, I like how you're splitting this up. So it's not necessarily a templated question that could apply to any organization. It's an approach where you define sort of what the organization stands for, maybe what the brand purpose is, and you have employees select what they think the organization stands for from a list of options, which includes the accurate option and some other options that aren't quite right. And then you just measure who selects the right answer as a way of understanding their, measuring their understanding of the brand purpose. Did I get it right? Is that a fairly?
Yeah, I think that's fairly fair. I mean, to be honest, it is a fairly standard survey. What we switch out is, of course, this organization's unique at the definition of their brand, right? So, yeah. But the questions that we are asking are fairly standard. And I should say, you know, we have a research team at Siegel & Gale who, this is what they do for a living. So they make sure, you know, it's objective and reliable, and there's kind of a test retest situation there. So we know we can count on the results. But yeah, it's a fairly straightforward survey and it gives us a lot of good information.
Nice. And one other question on this, I don't know, Graham, maybe you have another one too, but I'm just curious if you can share, like, what would be a good percentage of brand champions to have within an employee base? I mean, is that, I don't know if that's even a fair question to ask. Are we talking like 20% would be amazing, or, you know, you're really looking for a much higher number, or can you give us any context for what that might look like?
Well, it does really vary. I mean, what we see is, you know, an average might be like 30, 33, 35%, maybe average. But we do see organizations that have, you know, higher numbers, even at a starting point. And then, of course, the whole idea is that we do interventions to move people up. So we often measure it again, right? So we have a baseline measure of this. We run programs that might be focused on explaining the brand, engaging people with the brand and the purpose and so on. And then we'll run it again. And then we want to see that shift. And then we see that shift, which is great. You know, we've gotten organizations all the way up to like 70, 80% of brand champions before. Wow. With lots of effort.
This is all great, Gretchen. I think it presents an opportunity, right? And so we've seen a large move to remote work at home pieces. And, you know, we've read a lot of your content. And one piece that, you know, stood out was, you know, this concept of, boy, now that we're all remote, one of the challenges, and I think you unpack it in some of the surveys that you're referring to, is, you know, do our employees know what our purpose is, right? Do they understand what our EVP is? And, you know, you used to be able to, you know, walk down the halls, right, of a, you know, an enterprise rent-a-car that's, a, you know, that's where I worked, or, you know, wherever, and see it plastered, you know, across the halls, right, over the water cooler. And, you know, as less and less employees, and maybe that's changing a bit, but less and less employees are still consistently in the office, they're not seen, they're not reminded of, you know, that EVP, right, that, you know, that company culture as frequently as you would have been 5 years ago. So I'm curious, you know, what are you seeing, you know, organizations do to think differently about, you know, building that culture, building that connection to purpose, you know, with a now, you know, largely remote forward, right, workforce? You know, what does that look like today, you know, when you're trying to build out your EVP? And how different is that from, you know, when we did have, you know, largely brick and mortar and mostly in-office work?
Yeah, I mean, some of the things we're seeing is renewed focus on it. So clients are actually asking us to come back in and relook at, maybe we have a set of values or we have a purpose, but wow, you know, it seems like it's an important time to look at it again and put a spotlight around it. So that's just in its first instance, you know, recognition that we've got to do something. And then as we're looking at it, it's often about shifting it for the new world of work, right? Because the world of work has changed pretty phenomenally. So it's thinking about, you know, how are we going to make a nod to the flexibility that we need here now, or the fact that, you know, commitment to community and ESG is more important than it ever was before. And so once that's done, I think people are still rolling it out in ways that will meet people both physically and then also digitally. So, you know, things like apps being created where employees can log in and learn about these things. Of course, simple things, screensavers on the back of your Teams background in Zoom that are highlighting this stuff to keep it more present in a virtual world. And then the role of this kind of, we call them like brand stewards, but putting together these networks of employees who will be real ambassadors about protecting and looking after how we treat each other and how we show up both internally and then externally in line with our promise and our brand. So seeing those groups and kind of setting those groups up more and more, because they're able to kind of keep a watch on things and keep it real, you know, as opposed to the executive who are maybe not struggling with the realities of hybrid work and how it all happens, putting these networks in place to kind of be a pulse group that will talk about how things are working, how things need to shift.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm curious, I'd love to hear you elaborate a little bit more on the concept of, you know, these ambassadors, right? You know, so people that are kind of, you know, stewards of the brand and, you know, kind of the, you know, the watchdogs is the word I'll, you know, we'll use, right? The watchdogs to make sure that, like, the message is being reinforced. You know, what does something like that look like in practice, for example? Or, you know, what are some of the things that, you know, if you're an organization, you know, what should you be paying attention to? You know, what are some sort of, you know, red or yellow flags where, hey, if X, Y, and Z is happening, you know, Are those pieces that are maybe dug out in ESAT surveys or, you know, should be dug out in ESAT surveys? Or what does some of that stuff look like?
Well, the way we do it is we set up this network and we meet with them periodically. So maybe it's like once a month. And the network is set up of employees who are, you know, generally, you know, very leaning into the organization, high performers, high potential employees, not the most senior, you know, maybe mid-level to lower mid-level. And they are to represent different functions and different geographies. And so it's, you know, starting with that, it's kind of an honor to be appointed because we're saying like, you're special and you guys are going to help us be custodians of who we are and make sure we keep this right. And then meeting with them. And then, you know, we have different topics that we look at in every meeting. It could be like, let's talk about the values and how they're being lived, or let's talk about aspects of the employee experience. So let's talk about hybrid working and how is that working, and invite them to bring their perspective of what they see around them, and also start to ideate and problem solve around if there are things that we need to be addressing. It's a channel up to the executive. You know, this group is set up to be a trusted source of the executive actually appreciating, hearing their views and hearing what it is that may be needing to change.
Yeah. Well, I want to circle back to this conversation about remote work, because it reminded me of an article that you wrote recently for Little Black Book that has what I think is a pretty provocative title. Having written articles myself before, I know how editors can somehow punch up titles to make them seem more provocative. So I don't know if you actually wrote that title or not, but title says something like, you know, times may be changing, but the promises we make to employees never should. Mm-hmm. I think the provocative part from my point of view is the word never, which is very strong. You know, we have just come through a pandemic, and the last 5 years have been a time of great change for employers figuring out how to adapt to remote work. Now we're kind of on the other side of that, deciding whether we want to go back to working in the office or not. It's been a time of a lot of change. And I think many employers have changed the promises that they have made to their employees, at least in terms of how they show up in the office or whether they show up in the office. And I think if you just zoom out more broadly, you know, think of a company like General Electric that's been around since the late 1800s. I mean, it's hard to imagine that the promises they're making to their employees have not changed with the times. I wonder if you could just comment more about what you meant by that and maybe give some examples of companies maintaining the promises they're making to their employees over decades of change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So I think, I'm not sure I picked the word never, by the way. But hey, it got attention, so I think it's the right thing. But I feel pretty strongly about, it should be, let's say almost never. But what do I mean by that? So the promise that I'm really trying to refer to there is the promise of who you are as an organization. So what defines you in terms of your DNA? We like to think about that in brand kind of terms at Siegel & Gale. But you can also extend it to what are your core values and beliefs? So that's a promise. You show up and say, this is who we ultimately are. And that shouldn't be broken. And you shouldn't start acting in a way that is incongruent with that. And so, that's what I feel like through the actions that companies have had to take over the very challenging work time here. How is it that you stay true to at least that this is who we are? Ultimately, this is what we believe and so on. And, I really think a good example of that, it doesn't mean the company has to not do hard things. And it can't change some of the commitments it's made to employees, but it's how they do that. And are they still authentically showing up as this is who I am? And I was thinking about, example of that, of course, Airbnb comes to mind, when they made their layoffs and they were earlier in the whole pandemic, to make those layoffs. And, if you think about, what's their promise of who they are? So, they talk about their purpose and mission being creating a world where anyone can belong anywhere. And they have their values about being a host, embracing the adventure, being a serial entrepreneur, and the pieces that sit inside there. And what was very interesting about the way they made those layoffs and the communication around it was, to me, they absolutely upheld that aspect of this is who we are. The hard things still had to happen, but they were very transparent about what it is. And that links back to, some of those values. And they were really caring. Under their value of be a host, it's all about we're caring, we're open, we're encouraging. The letter was phenomenal. Talking about the value of each and every person, talking about the talent they have to still bring forward. The word love was used in there at some point, So that was staying true to who they were, but it didn't mean they didn't have to do a hard thing.
Yeah, I like that idea. It seems like it's an emphasis on how you do things more than what you do. Of course, times change, technology changes things, we have pandemics. As you say, we have to do hard things. But what remains the same, or should remain the same, is sort of the character of the organization, or the values is probably another way of saying it. How we approach difficult decisions, and how we communicate them, and how we treat our employees, even the employees that we're having to let go in these cases.
Yes, absolutely. That I think is going to pay off, tenfold, because that's about trust. And if you act in line with what you say in terms of your character and you're consistent to that, people will trust you. And trust leads to all kinds of benefits for businesses, better financial performances, better employee loyalty, better customer loyalty, and so on and so forth.
Oh, that's great. Well, I always say trust and I think it's a good pivot or a good segue to, one question I want to get into, and that's, we talk a lot about letting data make decisions. I know that Siegel & Gale just conducted a recent survey, I think of 15,000 employees across the world. And I'm curious, maybe two questions. First, what, if anything, surprised you about those survey results? And, how did it change, the way you're thinking about employer branding, in the future of the modern workplace?
Yeah. Well, let's start with what surprised me. I think the biggest one was actually, one of our headline findings, only 1 out of 4 employees find their workplace simple. And what's important for us is that simple workplaces are the ones where employees can easily get their work done and feel productive and fulfilled, also leading them to be advocates and innovate and so on. So the fact that only 1 in 4 finds their workplaces to be simple was quite surprising to me. That means there's a lot of work to do. And for us, that simplicity really comes back to that simple idea. What are we trying to do here as an organization, and how do we help you see that, in your work? So that was big for me. And it does, to your second question, show me that there's a reason to invest in this probably more than ever now, because the world is getting more complex and all the changes to the work situation has made things more complex. So we have to double down on a very clear story.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's very true. You know, I had to fill out a form this week, and it said, what was the mission over at Change Day? And I just said, our mission is to tell the truth and let data make decisions. And, you know, so I think for us, like our business is pretty simple. We let the data decide what we do and what we recommend, but maybe others aren't so lucky. So,
yeah, I know. And it's actually not that hard. Like, again, coming to the data. So the study that we did reveal, well, what is it that simple brands do? How do you become simple? And it's a list of things that just too obvious for people, but they need to hear it through the data. So, you know, like inspiring pride in your employees is very important. Fostering psychological safety, clarifying these employees' role, like I said before, with their ultimate impact that what their work has on clients, customers, and people in the outside world, and then making employees feel valued. So again, that doesn't feel like a rocket science kind of list, but maybe people need to see it through the data.
So I think that's a perfect direction. So, you know, I think the last question is probably the easiest one. And I'd love to know, how can people find you online?
Perfect. SiegelandGale.com. And I'm there under the Brand Ed Change Practice.
Perfect. And we will certainly link that article we mentioned on Little Black Book. And we'll also make sure we're carving out a link to that survey results that you just referenced too. So super excited to dig in a little bit more ourselves. Really appreciate you joining us on the show today, Gretchen. And yeah, looking forward to another conversation here again soon.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Gretchen.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, head on over to changestate.io or shoot us a note on all the social media. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll check you guys next week.